This is WHYY.
I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. A number of American corporations have been merging with foreign companies and moving their legal addresses overseas to escape paying corporate taxes in the United States. It's called inversion, and it's perfectly legal. President Obama criticized the practice recently, speaking at a technical college in Los Angeles.
There's a small but growing group of big corporations that are fleeing the country to get out of paying taxes. Well, hold on a second. I say fleeing the country, but they're not actually doing that. They're not actually going anywhere. They're keeping most of their business here. They're keeping usually their headquarters here in the U.S. They don't want to give up the best universities and the best military and all the advantages of operating in the United States. They just don't want to pay for it.
Treasury Secretary Jack Lew and Senator Carl Levin have called for changes to the tax code to prevent companies from getting the benefits of doing business in the U.S. without paying for them. So today, how does corporate inversion work? What's the effect on the U.S. economy? And what are some ideas for reforming the tax code? And joining us here in our Philadelphia studio is Richard Harvey. He's a distinguished professor of practice at Villanova University School of Law and graduate tax program that's just outside of Philadelphia. He was a senior government official in the U.S. Treasury Department and the Internal Revenue Service during the Reagan, Bush II, and Obama administrations. Dick Harvey, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you very much, Marty.
You're welcome. And on the telephone is David K. Johnston, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter who has been examining American inequality for two decades. Now he's a contributing editor for Newsweek and a columnist for Al Jazeera America, National Memo, and tax analyst. And he teaches at Syracuse University College of Law. David K. Johnston, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Nice to be here again, Marty.
David, let me begin with you. How long has this been going on?
Inversions come in waves. When I was at the New York Times, I wrote about them about 12 years ago, 13 years ago. And Congress had a five-hour debate on the floor of the House about how to shut them down and then proceeded to put little asterisks in that really didn't shut it down. It only gave the appearance of shutting it down. And there'll be another wave in the future if we continue down the way we're going now.
And I'm curious, Dick Harvey, why, I mean, we're talking about it now. It's gotten a lot of play in the news media. Is it happening more rapidly now? Are we seeing more companies taking advantage of this?
Absolutely. I think since the early 80s, there have been roughly 40 inversions. But since 2012, we've seen an acceleration of them, and there have been 12 inversions completed. There are 8 pending, and I would estimate there are, maybe are 50 or 100 that could take place over the next year or two, because shareholders and investment bankers are really anxious to potentially do this.
And how does it work? Can I toss that to you?
Well, trying to make it as simple as possible. The basic goal is you have a U.S. multinational that has a U.S. parent, and through a series of complicated transactions, there are various ways to make it happen. The end result is that you end up with a foreign parent, and therefore helps the tax situation of the U.S. multinational.
And does that mean that it's their address that is overseas? Is that what makes them an overseas company then?
Well, it would be their parent would be located overseas. In most of these situations, the operations of the companies don't really change. So they can oftentimes keep the headquarters here in the U.S. and just shuffle papers around to accomplish the results that they're desiring from a tax perspective.
David, one of the complaints is that American corporations pay a really high tax rate. I think adding it all up, if they were to actually pay it, it's closer to 40%. What, though, is the effective tax rate when it comes to corporations in the U.S.?
Well, the federal corporate tax rate is 35%, and except for the tiniest firms, which are irrelevant to this discussion, it's a flat rate tax. Big multinationals actually profit off their taxes. And when I first reported that 12 years ago, a lot of people were disbelieving until the Congressional Joint Committee on Taxation staff did an 1,800-page, 4-volume report.
Thanks.
Documenting exactly that by taking tax profits out of the U.S. and putting them overseas, you defer the tax, and in essence, you get an interest-free loan from the taxpayers, from the government, of the taxes you didn't pay. So while you and I have our taxes taken out of our paychecks before we're paid, Companies are able to pay their taxes if they want 100 years from now and still have use of the money. It's complicated and difficult, but they do have use of the money in the meantime. And by investing that money, eventually the tax burden becomes less than zero, and they literally turn a profit on it. The element that's confusing to people is that there's the actual tax the company pays,
right.
Then there is the statutory rate, and then there is this deferral, which often makes it appear a company is paying a tax when it's really not, on when you consider the time value of the money.
Do you want to weigh in on this, Dick Harvey?
Well, yeah, I think I generally agree with what David said. From a financial statement perspective, there's what's referred to as current taxes, which is what you're paying currently, and then so-called deferred taxes. And when a U.S. multinational has a foreign subsidiary, that particular multinational has to decide, well, do we think those earnings are indefinitely reinvested? If they are indefinitely reinvested, then in their financial statements that they report to the SEC, they would record no deferred U.S. taxes.
Hmm.
If, on the other hand, they don't assume them to be indefinitely reinvested or a portion of them, then they would record some deferred taxes. And U.S. multinationals like to have company or like to have analysts and reporters focus on the total taxes. Others try and focus on just the current taxes.
And David, I'm curious about what countries seem to be attractive. If we're talking about inversion, what are the countries that are attractive to these multinational corporations?
Well, all of this depends on, is very much what lawyers call facts and circumstances issues. The inversions in the past were making use of tax treaties so that on paper you rented a mailbox in Bermuda, and maybe, as in the case of one of the big company's neighbors, you were resident in Barbados, and you only paid a 1% tax as a result. The current deals have included Ireland, Switzerland, and elsewhere, and it's essentially a function of lining up rules that were actually written to prevent this and navigating among those rules and then the circumstances of the company that's involved if you're acquiring another company or merging with another company to achieve the benefit that you want. So it's not a simple here and there, but and almost any country in the world with the right circumstances and the right treaty can be used this way. So Bermuda, other Caribbean jurisdictions with British law, Singapore, Ireland, Switzerland, and often there are, because of Dutch law, transactions run through the Dutch system.
But if the effective tax rate is closer to 12%, or David, as you're saying, that some of these companies are actually profiting off their taxes, what is the appeal and what is the benefit for these companies if they go through this inversion?
Sure. Well, shareholders look, as Richard pointed out exactly correctly, at the accounting number, not the actual cash tax paid, not the statutory rate, but the accounting number. That's the only thing we really provide them with, and the accounting number is just not a real-world number. I mean, there are lots of problems with our accounting systems that give us information that doesn't reflect economic reality. So companies will then be allowed to report that they paid little or no tax. That makes the stock more valuable. I mean, wouldn't you rather own a company with if it earns a profit of 100, you get the whole 100, not
sure.
65 of the 100. The executives love this because, of course, it makes their stock options more valuable. Some of these deals actually require that shareholders pay a tax during the inversion. So the executives, in some cases, put their interests ahead of the interests of, in my view, ahead of the interests of the shareholders to whom they owe a fiduciary or a responsibility or a duty of loyalty.
Let me give you a chance to weigh in on this. Go ahead, Dick.
Well, I think what I believe is driving the inversions for many U.S. multinationals is what I'll call a liquidity issue. The U.S. multinationals many of them have been very effective at shifting income already offshore and paying little or no tax. For example, Pfizer. Pfizer in the last 8 years had roughly $100 billion of total pre-tax income over that eight-year period. But how much do you think they had in the U.S. during that period?
I'm thinking a big goose egg. I don't know.
Well, even less than a goose egg. Negative $14 billion in the U.S. for pre-tax income and $115 billion of pre-tax income overseas. So Pfizer is an example of a company that already has been very, very aggressive on shifting income overseas, really isn't paying any current U.S. tax. The question is, well, why was Pfizer trying to acquire AstraZeneca in order to invert? And the reason is that two reasons. One is they had a liquidity issue because they've got all this money overseas that they've shifted so much overseas, and they want to get some of it back to buy back stock, pay dividends, use it for other corporate goals, and they can't do that without paying a 35% U.S. tax. So I've been quoted as saying, in some respects, U.S. multinationals have been hoisted on their own petard as a result of shifting so much income overseas. So I believe that's the number one reason is the liquidity issue. The second reason, as David indicated, and as I alluded to, some multinationals will record some deferred U.S. tax expense on their financial statement. Pfizer happens to be one of those, so they do record some deferred U.S. tax expense. If they invert, they would be able to avoid that and make their financial statements look better.
David, I have a really basic question here, but is a tax haven different from what we've been talking about, inversion?
Well, we historically think of tax havens as places where you can put money legally or illegally and pay no tax. Any country potentially can be a haven. There are people for whom the United States is actually a tax haven. It depends on the intersection of the law in country A and country B, its treaties and your accounting situation. But there are, in fact, people who have money here in the U.S. because compared to their home country, we're a tax haven.
But would it be fair to say, David, that the countries like Ireland or the Netherlands or some of the other countries that you named, that they want American companies, in a sense, to be have an address in their country?
Oh, sure. No. This is clearly an effort in arranging these laws to do these things. I mean, the Swiss, for example, what is criminal tax fraud in the United States is not a crime in Switzerland. So we had all these people putting their money in Switzerland to hide it from the U.S. government. And American rules are not the norm around the world. Different countries have different rules and try to exploit this, which means the solutions to this are not at all the obvious solutions. You can't just say, well, we're going to tighten up on this rule. That won't do the job.
And I do want to pick up on that. We're almost up in a break here, but Richard, you mentioned Pfizer. What other, and that there are 12 companies that have done this more recently or in the process of doing it. Can you just give us a couple names?
Well, as far as the pending ones go, there's AbbVie, which is a U.S. company, potentially acquiring Shire, which is a U.K. drug company. There's Mealin, another drug company, potentially acquiring Abbott's. And the list goes on and on. I mean, there are a lot of drug or pharma companies, also some technology companies. But even brick-and-mortar stores like Walgreens hasn't necessarily announced it, but they're under a lot of pressure. They are going to acquire Boots, which is a U.K. drugstore similar to Walgreens, and they're getting a lot of pressure from their shareholders and their investment bankers to take advantage of the inversion.
We are talking about inversion in this hour of Radio Times, a complicated but important legal and tax issue. And again, that's Dick Harvey, Richard Harvey. He's a distinguished professor of practice at Villanova University School of Law and the Graduate Tax Program. David K. Johnson is a Pulitzer Prize winning investigative reporter. Much more after this short break. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Rider University supports WHYY. Rider invites listeners to learn about how its executive MBA program can help professionals leverage their business experience into greater leadership roles in their organizations. Rider is hosting an information session in Princeton, New Jersey on August 9th. Information is available online at rider.edu/EMBA or 609-896-5036. Rider University, preparing tomorrow's business leaders.
Hi, I'm Stephen Quinn. It's the Best of Q, and we'll hear a special feature conversation with hip-hop superstar, Toronto booster, actor, impresario, and Grammy winner, Drake. Gian Gomeshi with Drake coming up on Q from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Former President Nixon taped thousands of hours of conversations when he was in the White House. Now they've been transcribed in a new book.
Scholars could actually be a fly on the wall and watch, if you like, the sausage factory of how policy is being made, and in Nixon's case, particularly foreign policy.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're talking about something called inversion, and these are corporations using a loophole in the tax code called inversion. It allows them to establish an address in a low-tax country and escape paying U.S. taxes. And again, our guests are David K. Johnston and Richard Harvey. And I do want to quote something from Jack Lew, the U.S. Treasury Secretary. He said recently, or I guess wrote recently in the Washington Post, he says, many of these companies, for all intents and purposes, are still based in the United States. They remain here to take advantage of everything that makes the U.S. the best place in the world to do business: our rule of law, our universities, our research and development capabilities, our innovative culture, our skilled workforce. By moving their tax homes overseas, these companies are making the decision to reduce their taxes, forcing a greater share of the responsibility of maintaining core public functions on small businesses and hardworking Americans. To you first, David K. Johnston, do you agree with the Treasury Secretary on that?
Yeah, no, I think that that's a perfectly accurate description of the situation.
The idea is that you get the advantages of in many ways, our infrastructure and our universities, but are not paying the fair share. Do you see it as a moral issue, David?
Well, I don't like the term fair share, just to be square about it. I certainly see it as a moral issue. And I think that we need to have a serious debate, Marty, about whether and how we're going to tax corporations. There are 6 million corporations in this country, the IRS data show. We're really talking about 15,000 of them. They pay almost all of the corporate income tax, especially if you exclude the freelancers who were incorporated. And those are the companies that this affects. I can't invert even if I were incorporated, for example, as a practical matter. So I think we should be, all these other companies, roughly more than 5.5 million of these, are not taxed directly. The owners are taxed. They're called flow-throughs. There are a whole host of entities or ways to organize the company to have it be a flow-through. And I think we need to have a serious discussion about whether we want to do that to all companies. You can't just kill the corporate income tax, because corporations have then become bloated tax shelters, stuff full of money that wouldn't reinvest. Congress recognized that in 1909 when it imposed the original corporate income tax. But we really need to have a fundamental debate about how do we tax business profits? How do we tax capital incomes?
And I do want to get to that, but I want to give you a chance, Dick Harvey, to sort of weigh in on this issue about the morality or perhaps even immorality of tax, of these inversions.
Well, I've written that I'm offended by some of what U.S. multinationals have done, because the U.S. tax system is based on allocating income to where functions are performed. And if you have basically a U.S. company that has its employee, most of its employees here, most of its sales here, most of its property, plant, and equipment, you'd expect then, under the system that bases its taxation on functions, you'd expect to see most of the income here. Well, the U.S. multinationals are able to shift their intangible assets overseas and therefore take a lot of the income out of the U.S. So I am offended by that and what it does to the U.S. tax system. Also, you know, I was the first expert witness in the Apple hearing about a year ago, which got a lot of press.
Yeah.
And Tim Cook was testifying after me. And Mr. Cook, in his testimony, had said that Apple didn't use any gimmicks. And I was quoted.
That's the word he used, right?
He used the word gimmicks. And in my testimony, oral testimony, to Senator Levin and Senator McCain, I made it very clear that I about fell off my chair when I read that, because clearly the U.S. multinationals are using gimmicks to shift the income overseas. Now, is it amoral or not? It's difficult to say. I will say that as a practical matter, regardless of your views on that, corporations view themselves as answering to their shareholders, their investment bankers, and the like. And I think we're going to continue to see inversions at a much accelerated pace, regardless of whether we consider it amoral.
For all the reasons we've been talking about, all the advantages.
Well, the potential advantages, as I said, in my view, liquidity, maybe a little bit of a financial statement benefit.
I mean, David, what you hear is that these are companies acting as, quote unquote, rational actors. They're doing what a rational, I guess, corporation would do under the circumstances.
Well, if you accept Milton Friedman's theory, espoused by him in the New York Times, that the only duty of a corporation to its shareholders An economist may see the world that way. That is not what the law says whatsoever. And there's an excellent book on this called The Myth of Shareholder Value by Lynn Stout, and a video that I did when I was at Reuters as their economics columnist with Lynn Stout about it. Corporations are creatures of the state. The government creates the rules that allow them. The founders of this country were very hostile to corporations, but we have allowed now the creation of corporations for virtually any purpose. In many states, you're allowed to do it in complete secrecy, and it's been pointed out by a variety of people, including me, that if you're a terrorist organization or a drug-dealing organization, American law is extremely good for you to hide what you're really doing. But nothing seems to be done to reform this. And I agree with everything Dick just said, by the way, about this fundamental problem. And that's why I think the solutions to it have to recognize the real world, not the civic textbook world.
And I keep saying we're going to get to the solutions. Let me just read a tweet from Brian. He says, I assume if they practice inversion, closely held corporations lose their religious and free speech rights. Is that true? And I think that's going back to some Supreme Court rulings. I hear you laughing, David K. Johnston.
Yes, well, I wrote about Hobby Lobby when it first happened and said, you know, this is about religious rights for corporations, and all sorts of people on the right attacked me and said that's not true. And one of the points I've made is that if we're going to give religious rights to corporations, to whom would they pray? Mammon?
But you know, I was thinking, Dick, which is that if the CEOs of these corporations move to, let's say, the Netherlands or some of these other low-tax countries when it comes to corporate taxes, they would pay a really high personal income tax, would they not?
Well, if that's what would happen, yes. But the real world is you're able to do an inversion without moving the executives overseas. And you know, there's a little bit of a silver lining in that, because some might argue that the cure would be worse than the disease. If one were to start taxing corporations very aggressively, the issue is would they move even more operations overseas? I mean, currently, the U.S. multinationals are able to shuffle the papers, move some employees overseas, but not a lot. They're still keeping their base of operations here. And one of the things when we start talking about how to solve this is, well, how do you make sure that you get a tax system that doesn't, the end result, cause U.S. multinationals to actually start moving lots of bodies overseas, even more than they might otherwise do?
Let me get Lisa from, looks like, Phoenixville to join our conversation. And Lisa, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
I had a very specific question that had to do with back when, in the 1980s, when pensions were gotten rid of, the democratization of money, and the makeup of the board of directors was changed in corporations. So instead of people voting their shares, we had institutional banks that took over the proxies. And we saw a rapid change in corporate culture and corporate ethics. And how that plays into some of these tax issues. And up until that point, if a CEO took millions of dollars out of a corporation, you know, we called them embezzlers, and they went to jail. And now they're called successful. And it just seems to me that that was really the start of it when they killed pensions, and that was the conservative ideology. And the Republicans said pensions are bad, and we should give all this money to corporations that trickle down. And, of course, that never happened.
Well, Lisa, let me take your comment, actually put it to Richard Harvey, because he worked in the Reagan administration, was there back in the 1980s when there was actual tax reform. Do you want to comment on Lisa's comments?
I'm not entirely sure I understand 100% of Lisa's comments, but you know, to the extent that corporations – it used to be, we go back maybe 50, 100 years, corporations were very much locally driven, and they therefore had a very serious vested interest in the local economy and making sure that that functioned appropriately. Now that corporations have grown over the last 50, 100 years to be multinational in scope, I think it's pretty clear, at least to me, that their allegiances are no longer necessarily to their local economy, because they're spread across the world. And certainly when you have pension funds, that's the part of the comment that I didn't understand, is the pension funds changing the voting pattern.
Yeah.
But suffice to say that I think U.S. multinationals do not look as much towards their local economy And that does cause issues along the lines of what we're talking about.
Let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you. That's Richard Harvey. He's a distinguished professor of practice at the Villanova University School of Law and Graduate Tax Program. He was a senior government official in the U.S. Treasury Department and the Internal Revenue Service during the Reagan, Bush II, and Obama administrations. And joining us by telephone, David K. Johnston, a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter. He's a contributing editor for Newsweek, a columnist for Al Jazeera America, National Memo, and tax analyst. He also teaches at Syracuse University College of Law. And we're talking about something that, frankly, a lot of people are talking about called inversion or corporate inversions. Again, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Well, as promised, I do want to talk with our guests about how to reform this system. And David, what are some of your ideas?
Well, I the most important thing we have to do is have serious research done on this. You know, before the Reagan tax cuts in the 80s, there were two massive studies, commonly known as Treasury 1 and Treasury 2, that looked at all the aspects of this. The tax system is not simple. Think of a game of pickup sticks, you know, where you have to pull out one of the sticks. And the whole dynamic of the pile can change in unexpected ways. The fundamental principles that we should be following, though, are that all profits should be taxed, that they should be taxed immediately and not deferred, and there should be sufficient auditing of that, but they don't have to be taxed at the corporate level. We could tax it at the level that the money flows out. And so I think we should have a major study of whether to convert all publicly traded companies and partnerships to what are called flow-through entities. But we can't do that without some study, and we have to be very careful that corporations don't become, as the 1986 Tax Act is making them, which is what's driving this and which Dick alluded to earlier, these bloated cash shelters, because if you siphon your profits out of the U.S. as royalties you pay to your offshore pocket, you end up with all this cash. Companies are hoarding, by my count, around $7 trillion of cash right now worldwide, of which about $2 trillion is here in the U.S.
And hoarding it or holding it because they're looking for a more attractive environment tax-wise, David, in the United States?
Well, and I think less than a more attractive environment, there are two other things going on. One is executives are risk-averse. More than 70 cents out of every dollar of cash raised through secondary stock offerings in recent years has been put into cash savings rather than invested in growing the business. Back in the 70s and 80s was around 23 cents that were saved, so most of it was invested right away. So executives want to have these big cash pools to insulate themselves if the market turns against them for any reason. And then secondarily, these cash pools provide them with what look like better balance sheets to shareholders, but they distort and they end up with all this money offshore, as Dick has pointed out.
Yes, as we talked about earlier. So how would you reform this system if we're talking about inversions? Go ahead, Dick.
Well, I think before directly answering that, I got to set the stage a little bit and maybe put a little bit of meat on the bones of David's comments about the pickup sticks analogy. But you know, some of the problems that currently face trying to solve this problem, the first problem is what I'll call a competitiveness issue. And the U.S. multinationals have been very, very effective in framing the issue as to whether they can compete with foreign multinationals. And frankly, in some cases, I think U.S. multinationals are on a level playing field, maybe even do a little bit better than foreign multinationals. And others, especially ones that have liquidity issues, then they've got some issues. But they framed it as U.S. multinationals versus foreign multinationals. But there's a third party involved here, and that's the domestic businesses. And the domestic businesses are basically paying full freight at 35% rate. And when I think about trying to solve this problem, what I would like to see is a solution that would put all three parties on equal footing. Right now, U.S. domestic businesses are paying a lot of tax, especially if they're corporations. If they, if you're a multinational, whether it be foreign or U.S., you're paying very little or can pay very little if you do some aggressive tax planning. So whatever solution there is, I would like to try and equate those three businesses to the extent possible.
But what you're talking about is perhaps lowering the rate for domestic corporations and increasing it for foreign and multinational corporations?
Well, I'd like to – I'm not going to necessarily say the rate, although that may be one way to make it happen. But I think we need to lower the overall tax burden on domestic businesses and move that down in the direction of where U.S. multinationals and foreign multinationals are now, and then move U.S. multinationals and foreign multinationals up in the direction of where the domestic businesses are to try and equate the three of them. And frankly, the only way that I can think of to do that is to base U.S. multinationals and foreign multinationals' taxes based on where their customer base is located. And if they've got substantial customers in the U.S., then they're going to pay a substantial amount of U.S. tax. The problem with that is, and it's been proposed by many different individuals, the problem is that it would be a radical change in the taxation of multinationals and be vigorously opposed by multinationals, and not clear it'll ever happen.
David, I want to make sure I understand something. My understanding is that American multinationals pay taxes on their profits, their profits, wherever they make them across the world. Do I have that right?
Well, in theory, but no, not really.
Okay.
First of all, understand that we give multinational companies a dollar-for-dollar tax credit. So if you're ExxonMobil and you pay a dollar to the government of Saudi Arabian taxes, you get to reduce your U.S. taxes by a dollar. We don't double tax overseas profits. But all sorts of companies give tax holidays. Many of them have very corrupt tax systems. And unfortunately, the IRS does not have a good history of vigorously dealing with these. There's a famous case called Chevron about this, for example, in Indonesia, and a tax scam. Dick's point is fundamentally sound, that we should have a sort of a system. You can do it in several ways, and many systems do it with a three-part test. What percentage of your employees are somewhere? What percentage of your revenues are somewhere? What percentage of your capital is invested somewhere? And then on that formula, you will portion your taxes. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly one of the ways we could go at this. Lowering the tax rate per se will not do anything. Reuven Aviona, who is one of our very best scholars on this issue more than a decade ago, pointed out that so long as inversions are allowed, U.S. multinationals that invert have a huge benefit over domestic American companies and even over foreign companies that have operations in the U.S., you know, Toyota, Nissan, ABB, lots of others.
And in that, I mean, does this, are we talking about a race to the bottom? And we're almost up in a break here. The idea is that countries are going to be competing to be the place where a corporation sets up headquarters saying, you know, we're not going to tax you at all, or we're going to tax you 1% or 2%.
Okay. I mean, the short answer is yes. I mean, we are in a race to the bottom, especially for where companies are located, which is in the tax lingo referred to as residence country taxation. Mm. And I'm one of the believers that believe the source countries, where your customers are, ultimately is the way we're going to have to find our way out of this mess.
Let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. Again, that's Richard Harvey. Also with us, David K. Johnston. We're talking about an important issue. It's one that's been in the news recently, and it's complicated, it's important, and there's some ideas for how to reform it. It's called corporate inversions. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation and our callers at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Folk Festival proudly supports WHYY. This year's festival presents Old Crow Medicine Show, Jason Isbell, Janice Ian, Loudon Wainwright III, Natalie McMaster, Tempest, The Lone Bellow, Tommy Emmanuel, Sarah Jaroche, and many more. For a weekend of concerts, crafts, kids' activities, and camping, it's the Philadelphia Folk Festival, August 14th through the 17th on the Old Pool Farm in Upper Salford. For tickets and festival information, 800-556-FOLK or folkfest.org.
This morning when you came in my room, I was practically naked and you didn't look at my body once.
On the Showtime series Masters of Sex, actress Allison Janney's character is married to a closeted man. She's nominated for an Emmy for that role, and another for her performance in the CBS sitcom Mom. She joins us on the next Fresh Air.
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Feedback for how and what we're doing is everywhere. It can be direct, indirect, it can be verbal or nonverbal. We know it can come not only from the outside world, but also inside ourselves. I'm Dan Gottlieb, and on the next Voices in the Family, we'll speak with Harvard professor Sheila Heen about how we can use feedback we find everywhere to improve our lives. Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe. Just a recap, to escape paying U.S. taxes, a number of American corporations have been merging with foreign companies and moving their legal addresses overseas. The growing trend in corporate inversions has led to calls for tax reform from the president and from members of Congress. And today we're looking at corporate inversions, their effect on the U.S. economy, and a number of proposals to stop it or certainly reform it. Our guests are Richard Harvey, distinguished professor of practice at Villanova University School of Law, and David K. Johnston. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. David, even if there were some consensus on reform, and I know Carl Levin has talked about a two-year moratorium and then some time, I guess, to reform the tax code, perhaps even thinking about some of the things that you and Dick Harvey have been talking about. But is there any appetite in the U.S. Congress to institute any kind of tax reform?
Well, there's some. I mean, even Orrin Hatch, as authentic and solid a conservative as you'll find, has said this needs to be stopped. And there are certainly domestic businesses who cannot take advantage of this kind of stuff, screaming and yelling at their congressmen about the disadvantage this puts them at, how this creates an unlevel playing field. The opposition to this is from people who are mindlessly anti-tax. And unfortunately, we have a number of elected senators and congressmen who, you know, tax is a four-letter word, and the only word they want connected with it is cut. They're just mindlessly anti-tax, and they don't understand that, in fact, this country was founded. Remember, we live in the second American Republic. The first one failed because it didn't have the power to tax. So we created this country so that we would have the power to tax and the power to regulate trade. And so there is some appetite for it, but we are so deeply divided in this country and over these issues that what I see is a future in which there'll be more and more exploitation of the current rules in the system and not real overhaul, much less actual reform.
Do you think, Dick, that this could be stopped? That the Congress could institute something that would say this, and this what we're talking about is a legal loophole. Can that loophole be filled, or will they just, lobbyists and corporations, just find another way in?
Well, your question was, could it be stopped? Yes, it could be stopped in a number of different ways. Although Senator Levin's proposal, which I've advocated, I've actually recommended that there maybe ought to be a two-year moratorium. Practically, I don't think there's all that much chance of it getting enacted. But even if it were enacted on a long-term basis, I think ultimately corporations would figure out a way around it. So ultimately, the solution is, as David said, and as I've indicated, you need to reform the tax code to try and make it more likely that U.S. multinationals will stay here. But like David, I don't see there's certainly appetite for many people in Congress doing that, but not enough to get anything enacted. So I could see the potential for some legislation where members of Congress sort of slap the wrists of multinationals and they attempt to declare victory, but in reality, it doesn't really stop inversions going forward. But absent that, I'm not waiting for something to happen.
Let me get Marty from Wilmington, Delaware, to join us on Radio Times. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, business in this country is fascinating. No matter what government tries to do relative to business, its first reaction is you'll kill the business and the industry. And I'm not aware, I was a history student, I'm not aware of a single industry, any individual business. Never a single industry that was destroyed because the government either taxed them or made them to consumers or employees.
M- Marty, I hate to do this only just because, but we're losing every other word you're saying, and I'm just going to read off the computer screen. If corporations wish to be seen as people, then they should resolve that all of their actions should be seen as a person. If they're going to pass a quick law as a temporary fix, people taking inversions must pay back loans, grants, et cetera. David, I think when people hear this and they get offended. I think they feel like I, as you were saying, people have to pay taxes. We don't get to defer it. And when you hear about some of these advantages, it just kind of grinds away at people.
Well, let me reach back to a phrase from the civil rights era. We have two tax systems, separate and unequal. Congress does not trust wage earners. You have your income reported independently by your employer. You can't take a deduction for your child unless you have a Social Security number for them, et cetera, et cetera. But you are taxed before you get paid. But we treat corporations as totally honorable and trustworthy. That's crazy. That's just nuts. I mean, most corporations are well run. I don't mean to suggest they're not, but to think that with no independent reporting of what they're doing and the incredible complexity of accounting rules, that they're not going to exploit and game the system all the time is absurd. And that's part of the reason I think that we need to have fundamental reform. Source-based taxation is one of the very best ways, as Dick has pointed out, to go at this. But we really need to have serious discussion about this kind of taxation. Corporate profits are through the roof, and not corporate taxes.
Go ahead, Dick. Looks like you want to add something to that.
Well, I guess we haven't spoken thus far about the OECD's efforts surrounding this, and they've got a high.
Tell us who OECD is.
Now you're going to get me on the spot here. But that's the Organization of Economic Cooperative Development. Did I get that right, David?
Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. It's basically the 34 modern economies of the world.
Right.
Fair enough.
I got that part. I would have gotten that part. But the OECD has a project that's been going for the last year and a half, very highly publicized, trying to address this shifting of income. And there are many different activities that are being proposed. And one of them is country-by-country reporting, which will require multinationals to report, well, where do you earn your income? How much tax do you pay? How many employees do you have in certain locations? And that sort of transparency will help in what David was saying, in that it will give tax administrators some line of sight into better understand what different multinationals are doing as far as shifting income.
But are other countries as worried as some members in this country about corporations?
In fact,
taking
they may arguably be more worried,
just because
there's the perception, especially the U.S. multinationals are not paying any tax of any consequence in order to access markets around the world. That's the so-called source country taxation. The source countries, the Indias, the Chinas, the Frances of the world, they're very upset and they want to get more income out of these various companies.
David, I heard you say yes.
Well, yeah. If Marty Sullivan, who's a former economist in the Treasury and now, like me, writes for Tax Analysts, a nonprofit news organization, has done these fantastic charts where he shows returns on capital around the world. And in all the big industrial countries, those 33 countries in the OECD, you see pretty consistent returns. But then you look at places like the Cayman Islands and Bermuda, and the return rates are like putting a one-story building next to the Empire State Building or the Twin Towers in Philadelphia. And there's nothing going on there. It's all paper. And moving symbols around on paper is an extremely profitable enterprise under the current rules.
Mm. David, is there any way to know, if we're talking about inversions, how much has been lost to the U.S. Treasury because of inversions? Have you looked at those numbers?
Well, there's Senator Levin's committee, which has this is the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, which has an extraordinary record of bipartisanship. Tom Coburn and Norm Coleman, he was in the Senate, and other conservatives have sided with Levin in their reports. They've put the numbers in. They're not off the top of my head.
Right.
But the numbers are enormous. But I think the more important issue than the numbers themselves is the creation of an unlevel playing field. well beyond just the issue of taxes, Marty, we have a real problem that Washington and the state governments are putting in place rules that favor certain corporations over others. That's why you're seeing the spread of certain companies and certain industries, especially in the retail and area and lodging, through subsidies and tax favors against entrepreneurial local businesses. It is anti-competitive, it is out of the spirit of the founding of this country, and it's fueled entirely by campaign contributions and lobbying.
You want to add to that, Dick Harvey?
Well, I guess as far as a number, the Joint Committee of Taxation has estimated that the president's proposal to attempt to curtail inversions would raise $20 billion over 10 years. Frankly, I think that number is woefully low.
It'd be like $2 billion a year?
Yes. I think it's woefully low given...
We wouldn't care if it was $2 billion a year.
Ah,
given how many companies are on the launching pad to potentially do inversions.
So from there, I mean, the fact that so many people want to do it tells you we're talking a lot of money here.
I think we could be more money over time.
Picking up on something you just said, David, we have an email from Mike. He says, from an ethical standpoint, how does this relate to companies moving to low tax and low regulation states like Texas? I mean, are we sort of seeing inversion in the United States?
Oh, inversion internally works the exact same way. When I was at the Philadelphia Inquirer, I was dragooned into being head of the newspaper guild for a while for a contract negotiation. And suddenly at my doorstep, I had the complete internal finances of the Inquirer and Daily News. And one of the things I learned from it was they didn't pay any Pennsylvania taxes because they used the same siphoning devices to send all the profits to including fees that were paid to overhead management to the parent in Florida where there's no corporate income tax. And this goes on all over the country. In Wisconsin, one of the few states where corporate tax returns are public, the S.C. Johnson Company, you know, they make household products and they have all sorts of businesses. Their eight biggest businesses paid zero income taxes in the last, I think it's 10 years. I wrote about this some time ago. Zero to the state. And so this is an internal problem as well, and that's why you see so many corporations headquartered on paper in Delaware and in Florida. Dell, the computer company, is a corporation everywhere in the world except the state of Texas, where it is a partnership for tax purposes because there's a tax on corporations but not on partnerships.
Wow. Go ahead, Dedek.
You know, I agree with what David said, but I do want to add that the states, many states have been fighting back against efforts to strip income out of those states. So many states are now requiring so-called combined or consolidated returns, which then force the income that would otherwise be stripped out to come back, or there have various add-back provisions. And those are the sort of activities that states that have customers, you know, stick up their hand and say, wait a minute, we don't want you accessing our state and not paying any tax. So there are mechanisms the states are using, and I think what I'm suggesting is the countries are going to have to start using those mechanisms, and some of them are starting to use them.
But we have a couple minutes before I have to say goodbye here, and David, let me go back to you. Should we, though, encourage cross-border mergers? I mean, are there some advantages? If you could figure out how to level the playing field and allow for some taxes, I guess, to go to various countries. And it seems to me we live in such a globalized environment anyway. This is the future, is it not?
Yes. Business owners should decide how they want to allocate their capital and how they want to organize their business. We should just have rules that don't favor some businesses over others. And we may not actually need statutory reform. Some of the tax scholars, and I haven't done enough work to pass judgment on this, but some of the tax scholars are arguing that the Obama administration actually has regulatory authority to stop these things. It certainly could tie them up in the courts for a while, but at an enormous political price. But, you know, businesses should decide what they want to do. The government should set the rules, and the rules should be level playing field. Everybody pays taxes on their gains, and they pay them now, not by and by, and you never earn a profit off your tax.
Yeah, let me just jump in there.
Please do.
Yeah, certainly the Obama administration has some regulatory authority and executive authority, and they could, around the edges, make things a little bit more difficult on inversions, and they have over the last couple of years. But I don't think they have nearly enough authority to do what would be needed to stop inversions.
Meaning you needed to change the tax law?
Yes.
Which, as we said earlier, we don't seem to live in an environment
where that's possible.
And one gets the impression that the tax code has been written to advantage large and influential corporations that have a lot of money to spend on lobbyists. I'm looking at you, Dick Harvey.
That's the political world we operate in, unfortunately.
And you think...
Yeah, Marty, I'm actually doing a project right now where I'm going to redraft the tax code.
Really?
I'm starting with gift and state taxes. Yes, I'm starting with gift and state taxes. Currently, the tax code is 5,348 pages, as published by CCH. My guess is I can get it down to under 500 pages. I'm hoping under 200. But it means taking away special interest favors that are bought with either campaign contributions or the threat of contributions to somebody who will grant the favor.
But does it make sense to keep in deductions? I mean, I know that there are various kinds of deductions and things that companies can write off. If we're talking about leveling the playing field, does it mean, I'm looking at you, Dick, does it mean getting rid of that stuff as well?
Well, I think when people talk about eliminating deductions, they're usually talking about it in the context of tax reform and eliminating deductions and reducing the rate. Now, when I talk about eliminating deductions in the state context to avoid the shifting of income, and that should maybe be extended to U.S. multinationals, what I'm saying is if let's say a foreign multinational is doing business in the U.S., and
right.
the foreign multinational has located all of its patents in Bermuda, and then it's charging royalties into the U.S., substantial royalties, so they're stripping most of the income out of the U.S. Well, in that situation, maybe we don't allow them to take a deduction for royalties paid to Bermuda.
Well, we could go on. As you said, David, you're taking a 5,000-page tax code and winnowing it down to 500. David K. Johnson, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter. He's a contributing editor for Newsweek, a columnist for Al Jazeera America, National Memo, and tax analyst. He also teaches at Syracuse University College of Law. Richard Harvey, thank you very much for joining us today as well. And he's a distinguished professor of practice at the Villanova University School of Law and the Graduate Tax Program. Again, a senior government official in the U.S. Treasury Department and the Internal Revenue Service. And this was during the Reagan, Bush 2, and Obama administrations. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoen, and do stay with us for Hour 2. We'll be right back.